The following episode of Cocaine Air deals with suicide and suicide ideation. Listener discretion is advised.
I treated my people well. I gave them a brand new Rolex. I gave them an Excalibur. I gave them a Lotus, a Ferrari. These are bonuses that I've given my guys. And when my guys were not working, you're either at home, you're in church, or you're spending money. But you're not working for anybody else. That was mandatory. I do not let any one of my guys go farm out and work for somebody else. They were strictly employed by me.
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story, episode 8. Where executive producer Evan Goldstein and I discuss more crazy TJ Dominguez stories that we could not fit into the previous 7 episodes. One of the things that fascinates me about the life of TJ Dominguez is his Lamborghini dealership.
Yeah.
Like, it just comes out of left field for me. Like, he's smuggling marijuana, then he's smuggling coke, then he's got a Lamborghini dealership. Like, how did he become the largest Lamborghini dealership in the world, selling the most Lamborghinis?
At least for me, when I was little, Lamborghinis were the car. If you saw a Lamborghini on the street, it was like seeing a unicorn in a glade. You were just like, oh, look at that thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like, and then you always, you know, who's in it? Who's driving it?
What does a Lamborghini cost now?
I don't know.
In 2025, the starting price for the cheapest of cheap Lamborghinis, how much do you think?
$300,000.
$608,000.
Wow, really?
You need $600,000.
Jesus.
And then find another $8,000 to buy a Lamborghini today.
Yeah, and that Lamborghini comes with like a CD player.
How did it become the largest Lamborghini dealership?
Because all the money that I made, I pumped right back into it. And I'd go to Italy a lot and network myself because my money is in Switzerland. So now I jump over to Italy and I network with those guys over there. Say I brought a camera and to take pictures and the guy says to me, I remember this incident. I go, oh, that's a beautiful camera, you know, in Italian. And I said, oh, I brought this for you here. And oh, about that yellow Lamborghini, what are you doing with that one? Well, it's going to go to the guy in California. Yeah, California can wait. I'm the guy here. I don't see anybody else. I need a yellow one. So that I started getting more and more cars, more and more cars. And I was the only franchise at the time that put like 100 cars under the roof. It was just incredible. Chandeliers, you know, champagne, wine rack, a cappuccino machine that, Jesus, thousands and thousands of dollars. This thing was like 7 feet long, brass with glass domes, a brass eagle on top. I could show you pictures of that wall. It was very impressive. Pool table that would send me back about $100,000, that pool table. It was an antique back in the days of the king and queen stuff from England. And it was a real classy place. So we became the standard of the industry. Cappuccino machine, beautiful girls that were the hostess, which I would lose them all the time to all these guys that would come in, you know, they'd be the future wife or the main squeeze, whatever you want to call them. And matter of fact, whenever we advertise for Lamborghini dealership hostess, you'd think you were advertising for a Playboy interview or something. They're like trophy girls, every one of them. They're not dumb. They know what they're who's coming in. They're guys with the big deep pockets. So it was fun. It was fun, and we had a lot of fun living that world.
It was profitable. You made money with Lamborghinis.
Yeah, but I didn't really care. Look, if I'm making $100,000 or $200,000 on Lamborghini and I'm making $5, $10 million on cocaine, what's my priority?
Touché. Agreed.
You know, people who said they're money laundering. I don't give a damn about money laundering. I'm having a hard time spending what I've got. I've got so much already. I've got airplanes. I got cars. I didn't really need cash anymore. You know, it was one of the first American Express cards. I remember spending $100,000, $120,000 on a month on my Express card.
That's like putting $500,000 on a credit card today. It's insane.
$500,000.
$500,000 in today's money, on a credit card, yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Let me put like a house on...
Let me,
uh,
We bought
a house in Los Angeles, but
in Topeka, Kansas.
Let me throw that on my credit card. Just the credit line alone.
I know. TJ had so much money.
He looks good. Like I saw his picture.
Yeah,
He looks good.
He's almost, you know, it's like in the prime of life, but he's 73 now.
Yeah,
he's 73 years old.
He looks younger.
He does, and he's got that he's got the energy and spark of a man in his 30s. And when you talk to him, there's this ferocity about his voice, like he's passionate about stuff, and he wants to carpe the diem. But the most impressive attribute about TJ Dominguez, in my mind, is he is a man of his word. If he tells you he's going to do something, he's going to do it. If he promises you something, he's going to keep that promise. And it doesn't matter if it might cost him his life.
Mm.
I went to a town in Colombia that 125, 150 people had been killed. There's a war between the paramilitar and the guerrillas. They told me not to go there, including Pablo Escobar said that it was out of bounds. I couldn't go there. And I went there, and one guy says to me, "What, do you have a death wish or something?" When I'm walking into town, I had to go and get holy water for the mother of one of my friends that had cancer that had been born in that church, and she was in New York dying. And her son came and asked me if I would help him get holy water from this little church. And I said, "Can we just get it from another church? I mean, I don't really think it makes that big of a difference." "No, my mother said it had to be that church." I said, "Then we're going to honor your mom's wishes, because my dad passed away from cancer. And I know what love is all about, you know, and having a dying person in your family." So I said, "We're going to go to that little church up on top of the mountain." Well, we went up to the little church on top of the mountain. And as I'm walking up there, a little car shows up. There's nobody. There's blown cars upside down. And I'm talking bazookas, not guns. I'm talking about holes in building, like a war zone, you know, with heavy, heavy artillery. And buildings burn. Nobody's anywhere. The one guy pulls up. He says, "This is a war zone. What are you doing here? Do you want to die?" And I said, "I'm going to die, yeah. But I'm not going to die today. And that I'm sure of. I've got to go to that little church up there and get some holy water from my friend." The guy, he said, "Jump in the car. I'm going to take you up there." And so, "What would you do that?" He says, "Because I don't want you to die." So he took me up there. We got the holy water. He brought me back. I tried to give the guy money, right? You know, for gas and his time and all that, when he brought me all the way back to where I was at. And I said to I said, "Here's a couple of dollars for your time in trouble." And the guy goes, "No, that's okay." I said, "Well, for gas money." He said, "No, that's okay." I said, "So why did you do it?" And he said to me, "Because today was not your day to die." And he disappeared. Nobody says no to money in South America. Cash, dollars, nobody says no.
I think he was a guardian angel.
I know you'd say that.
I know. I know you think I'm woo-woo. But I do believe in guardian angels. Have you had experiences with guardian angels?
No.
You've never had a guardian angel in your life?
No, I'd like to. Believe me, I need one.
Well, they really only show up when you're about to die.
Oh, okay, never mind. I don't need one.
I've had three guardian angels in my life.
Oh, yeah.
But I look back, and even at the time, I knew something was up. The first guardian angel to appear to me, I was like 7 or 8 years old. I was a latchkey kid, you know, so I was out on the street with my friends in the neighborhood, and I was about to run across the street this one time. And as I got in the stance to run, something held me. I couldn't move. Mm. Something froze me. It felt like an invisible force field. And I stopped. And at the second I stopped, a car zoomed by.
Oh, yeah.
And in that moment, I knew if I didn't stop, but I didn't stop, something stopped me. But if that didn't happen, that car would have mowed me down. I'd be dead. And I was a kid. And even looking back at that memory, that was a guardian. What else stopped me? I didn't stop me.
Yeah. I wish everyone could see how animated Jonathan is right now.
Well, I mean, it's Jude. When I look back at it, what else was that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's possible.
I'm not discounting it. I was about to dart across the street. And as I put my foot forward, it's like, I hit a force field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cut to another guardian angel experience in my life. I'm 19 years old. I'm living in Miami, going to college. We're going to the Mariah Carey concert.
Ooh.
I'm in my red Isuzu Amigo. Driving south on I-95 at night, going to the Mariah Carey concert. My brother is in the car and my two cousins are in the back seat.
Uh-huh.
And it's dark on the highway. There's construction, right? And I'm in the fast lane because I'm 19 going fast. And all of a sudden, the steering wheel moves and I change lanes. I didn't consciously change lanes. I'm telling you this. Here's why. I didn't consciously change lanes. I just drifted over to the center lane. And the moment I drifted over to the center lane, we passed a stopped bus with no lights on it that had been abandoned in the fast lane, like the bus broke down. And I zoomed by it, nearly hit it.
Oh my God.
And my brother and my two cousins thought that I changed lanes to avoid the bus. I didn't see the bus. It was dark. I'm going 70 or 80. I didn't see it.
Yeah, you just did it.
Something, I didn't even do it though. Something moved me. Like I didn't consciously, you know when you're driving, you consciously change the lane?
Sure,
I didn't do that, it drifted over.
I see a theme emerging. I think, I don't know if it's a guardian angel. I think it's like the saint of motor vehicles.
No, man, I get chills talking about it. Like I didn't, there but for the grace of whatever that was,
yeah.
I would be dead. Not only me, my brother and my two cousins.
Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code Walton. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code Walton. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now.
I do believe in guardian angels. Okay, third guardian angel in my life. I was 30 years old, you know, through many different circumstances and life events, I realized I'm gay. I don't want to be gay. You know, I grew up believing being gay is like the worst thing in the world you could be. It's like the devil. I went to a Catholic school, like my family would never accept it. Like, so I decided to end my life. And it was a very rational decision. And I started planning my suicide. So what was brilliant about my suicide was, because it was going to be flawless. I'm kind of proud of this plan, you know, just as a creative, as a producer, like this is how you go out. If you don't want anyone to know, you're going to kill yourself. I worked on the morning show. I was in Houston, a reporter at CBS in Houston, and I had to wake up at 3 a.m. So I started telling everyone. So over this 2-week period, I started telling everyone, I'm having trouble sleeping. So I'm taking over-the-counter sleeping pills and they're not working. I'm taking more and more. I took 5, I took 6 and I can't sleep. I can't sleep. So all my friends and coworkers thought I was having trouble sleeping. And I let them tell me, well, you should get prescription sleeping pills. And I'm like, okay. So it was their idea, not mine, but it was mine to give them, to give me. Yeah. And this is over a 2-week period. So my plan was, I was just going to overdose on a bottle of sleeping pills, prescription. No note. No one would ever know I committed suicide. Because I thought it would be easier for my mother to accept that I died of an accidental overdose than that I was gay.
Yeah, that's sad.
I believe that, though.
Yeah.
Well, in my mind, I was doing the right thing.
You also grew up in Jamaica where, you know.
Bought him enough and dead.
Yeah, kill you.
Yeah, I know. I know. So I was battling all of that. So, again, I made the decision. This is how it's going to go. The die is cast. I started telling people the sleeping thing. They suggested the prescription. I had this whole plan, and obviously nobody knew. I was the funny guy in the morning news, making everyone laugh. I wasn't telling anyone when I'm like, no, when people are really going to kill themselves, like no one knows. Like they don't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't hint. No jokes, no gallows humor, nothing. Yeah. I was determined this is going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm 2 weeks into this plan. I know it's inevitable. This is what I have to do. And I would go to bed crying every night. And on this particular night, I go to bed crying, and the refrain in my head is, you know, I can never make my mother proud. I can never make my mother proud. Like, I have to do this. Like, I can't live anymore. I can't make my mother proud, which is such a gay boy concern, right? Can't make my mother proud. And then, in that moment, a voice in my bedroom said, like in a whisper, you will make her proud. Swear to God, like outside of my, and I got up out of bed and I'm looking around my bedroom like, who the fuck just said that?
Yeah.
And it said it again. You will make her proud.
Oh, wow.
as you can hear me talking, that is the, I heard it.
Mm.
I decided to kill myself. Like, I knew what I was doing. This was a voice outside. And in that moment, when he said it the second time, it sounded like a male voice. Everything lifted. Like, I knew, oh, okay, well, maybe I don't have to kill myself then. Maybe if I can still make her proud somehow, I can stay on this earth.
You know, who knows? Maybe you do have a guardian angel.
If you're thinking about taking your own life, believe me, I understand. I've been there. I know it feels like it's the only option you have left, but I assure you, it is not. And the one thing I can guarantee you in this life is that everything changes. And how you're feeling right now is no different. It will change. You just have to hang on until it does. 1 year after I decided not to end my life, I fully accepted and even embraced being gay. I met the man who would become my husband and my soulmate, and we've been together and madly in love and happy for the past 18 years. I also went on to have amazing adventures producing TV shows like Shark Tank and American Ninja Warrior. I started doing podcasts like Queen of the Con and Cocaine Air. I even wrote a book for a major publisher, Penguin Random House. Becoming a published author was way above and beyond any of my wildest dreams. And I've had some wild ones. I am truly ecstatic to be alive. And I'm fulfilled and excited about the future. And most importantly, I'm happy. And I am so grateful I never committed suicide, because I would have missed all of this. Take the fact that you are listening to these words right now as a sign, or even just dumb luck. I'm talking to you. If you're thinking about ending your life, call or text 988 and speak to a professional counselor for free. Talking to someone about what's going on always helps. Just call or text 988. Now, back to Cocaine Air episode 8, where Evan and I are talking about that random stranger in TJ's life who showed up out of nowhere and protected and guided him on his mission to get holy water from that tiny church on a hill.
I do believe in guardian angels, and I do believe that guy who materialized out of effing nowhere in the Colombian region of Nowheresville
and won't take your money,
refused to take money, saved TJ's life, guided him to the church to get the holy water, guided him back and disappeared, wouldn't take any money.
God, there's so many crazy stories.
I think he was a guardian angel. I think TJ was surrounded by guardian angels.
Yeah.
You know, how do you make all these flights in and out of Colombia with the military shooting at you? Oh my God, in episode 2, when the Bahamian drug team and the helicopter with the bazooka and the guns are shooting at his boat, like, how is he not dead? He should be dead.
Yeah.
So many times he should have been killed. And he lived. I think he just has like this, if you could lift the veil and see all the guardian angels, it's probably like a choreographed, like, theatrical armada of, like, stagehands, like, running and grabbing the rope and getting the thing and pulling him out and blocking the bullet and blocking the blip, you know, like, I don't know, in my mind.
Yeah, maybe. I also like that he has this kind of karate background.
That kind of informs everything.
He's like the Hispanic Chuck Norris.
He is.
Like, he's a man of action. When Tito Dominguez does a push-up, he's not pushing himself up. He's pushing the earth down.
Was that a Chuck Norris joke?
That was a Chuck Norris joke, yeah.
I mean, another thing about TJ, he really loved the ladies. He really loved the ladies.
Yeah.
Or did the ladies really love him?
Probably a bit of both.
Have you ever heard of a cuckold? A cuckold is a guy who derives pleasure from another man sleeping with his wife. Sometimes they're watching. Sometimes they're just listening at the door.
Or sometimes they just know and sometimes they get off on the thought.
Yeah, they'll go in another room and just the thought of their wife with someone else gets them off. That guy's a cuckold.
Yep.
Now, until the proliferation of mass porn when I was younger, I didn't know what a cuckold was.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Right? But it's a porn category now. You type cuckold and millions of videos pop up with, you know, share my wife and do this to my wife and blah, 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 my wife. And then sometimes the guys participate, whatever. So I'm telling you this because this next story TJ is about to divulge, I believe, is a cuckold situation.
Intriguing.
I'm in the Bahamas, and I'm there with Jack, as a matter of fact, and we're having dinner. And there's this hot chick that's having dinner, and the other opposite table, she's looking at me, I'm looking at her, and I guess her husband can't see me because I see the back of his head. But I see the eyes wandering, and she kind of gives me a wink. I wink back. So, and you know, now she's smirking, and you know, she's basically flirting, right? So Jack is, what are you doing? I said, there's a chick over there, man. She's really hot, look at her, you know? And he goes, yeah, she's with that guy. I said, well, why is she looking at me? Why is she winking, you know? So I just had to get a little bit more bracing, and I said, go to the bathroom. Bathroom. And I turned around and I said to Jack, if this girl gets up, we're gonna stay here an extra day. And she got up. She went to the bathroom, and as soon as she went in that hallway, you know, we're not gonna sit here and introduce ourselves. We basically had the same thoughts in mind. I said, what are you doing with this guy? That's my husband. He's down here on a fishing expedition trip. So they fly in on their jet. They send the boat ahead of time. We were staying at the big game. The guy was loaded, you know, a lot of money. And so I said, fishing expedition, like the tournament that's going on? She goes, yeah. She says, when does he leave? He said, first thing in the morning, daybreak. I said, I'll be right there. I sat there like a bird dog. The guy left, I walked in. And the next thing I know, we were in the bedroom, you know, when I heard, they were staying in a bungalow, which was a room in the back, a living room, a little kitchenette, and then the door. Next thing I hear some noise, and it sounds like a joke, but it really was. And I just said to myself, I don't think that's housekeeping. Next thing I know, he walked in on me, and I'm with her in the bed. I just jumped up, though, when I heard the door. Had a bad feeling it wasn't housekeeping. So I reached for my pants. I put on my pants. I'm buttoning my pants. I don't have a shirt on. I don't have shoes on. The guy looks at me, looks at her. She's in the bed. I turned around. I said to the guy, look, man, what do you want me to tell you? I know her from school or something? I said, if you touch me, I'm going to break your arm and beat you with your own arm. Don't touch me. If you help me find the other shoe, I'll get the hell out of here a little quicker. I looked around, I got my other shoe, put on my shirt, the guy stepped out of my way, I walked out. That was that.
I think this is 100% a cuckold situation.
You think that the guy, you think this was preset where, okay, you come back at this time, I'm going to be in bed with this guy, and you can watch.
You can watch.
Or yeah. Potentially join.
Well, TJ was never going to let that happen.
No.
But I do believe the guy did not mean to be, I don't think the guy meant to make a noise. I think the guy was trying to slip back into the room to watch his wife with TJ and got busted.
Yeah.
I think he was a cuckold.
Because the story from her was...
He's out fishing all
he's
day.
He's out fishing in a tournament.
Right.
So why is he back
yeah,
here?
Yeah, that's a huge flaw in her story.
I if forgot he's out my fishing rod. All day,
if he's
oh,
out
I see
fishing,
you have one right,
right
there.
If he's out fishing all day, how is he suddenly back in the room? Quietly, quiet as a titmouse.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. There are, you know, there are cuckolds.
Yeah.
This is a... thing. Did Tito notice a cuck chair in the corner?
What's a cuck chair for the uninitiated?
It's the chair that a cuckold sits in while he watches his significant other with another man.
Yeah. So this is a whole scene. I broached this with TJ. He had no idea. It blew his mind.
Yeah, it's possible. It's very possible.
And the other reason I think it's a cuckold situation, not just because she said my husband's going to be gone all day in a tournament, suddenly he's back,
yeah,
but because the husband wasn't enraged.
Yeah.
If you came home and saw your wife in bed and you're on a Bahamian vacation and your wife's banging some guy she met in a restaurant.
Although TJ, the first thing he says is like, you touch me, I break your arm and I'm like rip it off and beat you to death with it or something like that. I think guys size each other up immediately, and you could kind of, you know, if you see someone in a kind of in a situation like that, one, you're in shock, and two, it's like, on top of it, this guy is having sex with my wife, and then I'm gonna get my ass kicked.
Okay, here's how I poke a hole in that theory.
Okay.
Two reasons I think he's a cuckold. If he was not a cuckold, he would have reacted one of two ways. Either he would have been outwardly furious, shouting, yelling, threatening violence. Even if he's not threatening violence, he would have been angry.
Crying.
He would have been something.
Some emotional reaction.
But it sounds like he didn't have much of an emotional reaction. The only other way a real husband, a non-cuckold husband would have reacted, he would have just ran away. I can't believe you did this and disappeared.
Yeah, totally.
He didn't. He stayed.
Yeah. He stayed with it. He left and...
TJ left. He let TJ leave.
And then they...
And then they...
Reviewed the security footage that they carefully planted before...
I'm sure she, you know, and again, I'm not judging cuckolds, more power to them, but it is an arrangement a husband and wife have with each other. The husband's the cuck. The wife is going to have these adventures with other men, and the cuck's going to watch. I think this was that in the 1980s in the Bahamas, before we knew what that was.
Yeah.
Thanks to the internet, we know what everything's everything is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's what I love about getting older is, you know, the wisdom comes. You can deduce so much from what's in between the lines. I just know, based on what TJ says, he told the guy, don't touch me. If you help me find my other shoe, I'll get the hell out of here a little quicker. I looked around. I got my other shoe. The guy stepped out of my way. I walked out. That was that. For the guy to step out of his way, he's not mad. And if you catch your wife sleeping with someone and you're not a cuckold, you'd be furious.
You would think it would evoke some kind of extreme
emotional reaction
in one way or another.
I think he was disappointed.
Yeah, maybe.
That it didn't continue and he couldn't participate or watch in the cuck chair.
Yeah, it's very possible.
TJ clearly is not into cuckolds. He's not into that kind of kinky, you know, fetish kind of stuff. He's a regular straight guy from the olden days. One man, one woman. He's not into the crazy stuff, but... TJ's underling, Jack, is.
I'm in Colombia, and Jack says to me, hey, Tito, man, you're going to hook me up, right? So I'm like, yeah, sure, Jack. And then he would get nervous. He'd stutter. He'd go, just get me four, Tito. Get me four. I said, Jack, what are you going to do with four of them? It's too much for you. He goes, just get me four, man. So I said, okay, four it is. So I make arrangements to have four hot chicks. And these are not like streetwalkers. These are $4,000 or $5,000 chicks back in the day. Nowadays, all these sites that you have, no, these are like college girls. You know, friend of a friend, and all of a sudden you hook up with a group of girls that, oh, my friend would love to go to a party. Party animals. And, you know, they're not doing it even for money, but you give them, here's $5,000. Next thing you know, you got four or five of them lining up. And that's how these things work. And that's the kind of exposure that we had. But Jack and those guys, I can't even go into the detail, kind of perverted stuff that they would do. Too perverted for me. I didn't even want to stay in the room with them. They're all naked, like a regular, you know, not even a loving, because it was just, they had toys and things like that. Just stuff that I don't like. I don't need another guy in the room with me. I don't want to touch another guy. Just women, you know? And yeah, I don't mind laying in bed with a couple of them, you know? It's nice, you know? Nothing wrong with that, but I just don't want to do the perverted stuff, you know?
TJ is like regular straight tough guy from, you know, the 1950s movies.
Well, just, you know, he's an old fashioned guy that, you know, he's about respect. I think that's why TJ is so endearing, because you imagine, you know, top line cocaine smuggler for Pablo Escobar. You're expecting someone that is ruthless, that is killing people, that is fighting it out, machine guns, like at least... You know, based on movies and all these kind of things that we kind of, because, you know, everyday people aren't kind of privy to that world, you know, and all we have to go by is, you know, what we've seen in movies and TV and stuff like that. But what's so endearing about him is just you get a sense of a man of honor.
Yes.
Among thieves.
And among non-thieves. He is a man of honor, full stop.
Yeah, and it's endearing the way he values fairness. Like, there is something to be said, sure, he's doing something illegal, but he is the anti-hero because, sure, he's running afoul of the law with doing all this stuff, but he's not out to hurt anyone necessarily. Right. He's just out to, you know, supply and demand. You know, people want cocaine, he's providing it for them. It's the same thing with prohibition. People were going to drink, and people broke the law to give people alcohol. It's the same thing. The most fascinating thing is this would have never happened had he not been conned.
Exactly.
Because you go down one path, there's two ways to go. You cower in the corner and lick your wounds, or you go after it. And TJ just flipped the script.
Yes, I see myself in him. That's my story too.
Yeah.
That is my story too. Getting con changed me. It turned me into this vigilante. I have a book coming out in August, Anatomy of a Con Artist. I've investigated hundreds of cases. I've helped a lot of people, and I would not be on this path had I not been conned. Similar to TJ, he'd not be on his path unless he got conned. We just changed in different ways, but ultimately we became good people. And what's crazy is here we are all the way in episode 8. We think we've heard the TJ Dominguez story. We think we've heard everything, but we've really only kind of scratched the surface. There is so much more to this man. We're going to talk in the next few episodes to some of the people in his life. And we're going to hear from TJ himself about the impact the podcast has had. And a crazy story, I had no idea that right when they arrested him, he was getting out of the cocaine business. And then he got busted. To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. Sound design and editing for this episode was done by Mike Smith. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media, so subscribe and keep an ear out.